Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled, and we want that post-burnout growth for you, too.
Fried fam, today we get to talk about one of my favorite things in the world, which is quitting. And not just quitting your job. We're going to be talking about what it means to quit kind of overall. And you're going to hear it from the perspective of someone who, for a lot of reasons, had to push through and couldn't quit certain things and was forced to be in a position where perseverance was absolutely key. And she still learned how important quitting is. So if she learned it, you can learn it. Today, we get to hang with my friend, fellow speaker, gorgeous human, Courtney Clark, who is the luckiest unlucky person in the world. After a series of major struggles beginning in her mid-20s, she has built two successful businesses and is the author of two books, including her most recent book, Revisionary Thinking. She works with people who want to adapt faster and achieve more and has spoken worldwide to organizations like Procter & Gamble, Dell, S&P, Humana, Cisco, and Cardinal Health. Courtney, my friend, welcome to Fried.
Hi, Kate. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. So let's give people the 30,000 foot view of all the shit that happened to you.
Cool. I became a researcher and expert on resilience by accident, like most good jobs. but I was diagnosed with cancer for the first time at age 26. And it turns out that was because of my exposure to the World Trade Center. I just graduated from college, started my first job, and I was down there. And so because of that, I've now been diagnosed with cancer four times. But weirdly, that turned out decently for me and set me on the path that I'm on. That's a path that I'm happy to be on.
So I want you guys to just listen to this. First, she lives through 9/11, actually living there and being in that community and being in that world. So very firsthand experience of 9/11. And then for years and years and years after, the aftermath of it is getting diagnosed and moving through cancer four times. There was also a brain aneurysm somewhere along the path. I know that sometimes I don't believe that it's useful to point to other people's lives and say, well, they had it worse, so I must be able to be okay. Like, I don't think that that's useful. And I think it's sort of judgmental. And at the same time, we do need perspective sometimes.
So I believe that you cannot give someone else perspective. So you're exactly right that, like, if you and I are having a conversation and I try to point to someone else's story and be like, Kate, at least you don't have it as bad as that, never works.
Never.
But you can do that for yourself.
Right.
And you can look at what other people, it's a joke in the cancer world that, like, we each, having been through our own experience, we look at other people and go, oh God, I'm glad I didn't have that. And so perspective is a real deal. And we should all get it. You just can't force it on someone else.
Right. Exactly. And we don't want it to, there's no reason for it to diminish the experience that you're having at any given moment. if things are hard, you're allowed for things to be hard, even if other thing, if other people had things that were hard. Right.
Yep, but not, that's,
yeah, not a competition. So I put all of that out there so that you can come at this from a space of whatever I learn in this episode are things that I can apply maybe a little bit differently than Courtney did, maybe in a different area of my life than Courtney did, but we are all facing stuff and the stuff that I face is faceable. And so here's what I can do and where I can do it. And I want us to start this conversation from this place because we're going to be asking you to look at some serious notions of stick-to-it-ness that might be misguided. So let's talk about giving up. Let's just get right into it.
I stumbled upon this idea of giving up because it's really been following me around since my very first diagnosis. And I was diagnosed with cancer the first time and people said, oh, you're so strong. And they mean it as a compliment and I didn't know what to say. So I was like, thank you. And then 2 years later at age 28, I was diagnosed with cancer again. And oh, you're so strong. Oh, thank you. And then a few years after that, I was diagnosed with the brain aneurysm. They would not have found the brain aneurysm, Kate, if it hadn't been for the cancer. What a wild turn of events. I had no symptoms. I could have died of the brain aneurysm if it hadn't been for the cancer. So I'm not going to, certainly not going to be as trite as to say like, oh, I'm so thankful for it. But
right.
Legit, cancer saved my life. But it was the pain of going through the brain aneurysm. And I had 3 brain surgeries in 8 days. And I had moments. As I'm a positive person, I am incredibly lucky to be alive. I know that. But I had moments that I wanted to give up. I had moments where I looked up at my newlywed husband and I said, I should have never had this surgery. I should have just waited for the aneurysm to rupture so I could have died in peace. And, in hindsight, I guess that's embarrassing to say. Because I am so lucky, because so many people don't get the good outcome that I had. But what I realized about that is that we tell this story of what survivorship looks like, what going through hard times looks like. And we've a little bit romanticized the idea. Okay, we've a lot romanticized the idea of, you know, powering through and putting on a happy face. And I think part of the reason why we like it and we tell ourselves that story that other people are suffering, oh, but they're doing it with so much grace. We like that because I believe that it allows us to cling to this thought, this hope that if it were us, we'd be okay too. It's bad, but it's not so bad. But the reality is then that can lead friends, family, the support system to minimize, to say at least the life doesn't give you more than you can handle. Everything happens for a reason. All of these things that I heard that were, of course, well-intentioned. And they were meant to make me, they are. People want to help. They don't want you to be suffering. I know.
Well, here's the thing about that in my mind. I think that people don't want you to be suffering because they don't know how to sit with suffering. So they, it's well-intentioned for themselves. They are trying to eliminate the fact that this is so hard so that they don't have to sit with you in it.
100%. They want you to be okay because they want them to be okay. And
right.
It's comfortable, and we don't want to imagine somebody being in the pit.
Yeah.
We can't help them. And that's horrible.
Yeah.
So I do believe that people have good intentions when they say that. But man, it turned out for me, I felt like bad execution.
Yeah.
And I was lucky that I did have the right kinds of support in many, many places that I could turn to and lean on. But going through that and realizing that we love that story, that heroic brave positivity story, if you can't show that to the world, you then feel very alone. And the problem then becomes every one of us is going to be that person in the pit at some point. And if we then believe that everybody else around us is handling it with grace and courage and positivity, then we feel like a bad person for not having that fortitude. But the reality is that feeling, that is part of the path.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about it and we're not sharing it. So going through that sensation of wanting to give up, it stuck with me. And I reached a breaking point a little less than a year ago when I saw three hyper positive memes in a row on my social media feed. And, you know, it was, you can do anything you put your mind to and all of these things. And I just turned around to my husband at 10 o'clock at night on my iPad. And I was just like, no, that's it. I'm done. No. Have you ever seen, you've probably seen something just like that.
Well, and this has been a message that we've carried through Fried from the very, very beginning, because one of the first things that I created years and years ago was the resentment journal, because people were so, let's speak in I sentences. I was so sick of people telling me to have gratitude for my gorgeous life that burnt me out. And I was part of it and my life was part of it and the environment was part of it. And, you know, everything had its little piece. And I'm not going to say that I didn't have any part of my own burnout story. It was a lot of my own behaviors that were learned, adapted, coping mechanisms, whatever. But every time somebody gave me I saw online, like, well, just write down three things that you're grateful for every night before bed. Do it in your little special gratitude notebook and make sure you have a pen that you love and make sure it's really specific and la, 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 la. When I was burnt out, that shit was just not available to me. Like, I could have written very specifically about a million things and not felt anything.
And then doesn't that make you feel worse?
Exactly.
Because you're like, I tried the strategy that everybody says is the strategy. And I believe that we've created this culture where if you can't find positivity, you're bad and wrong.
Yeah.
And if we could just kind of let that go, then and maybe just allow two things to coexist at the same time. Like you can have gratitude for something and where it got you and what you have because of it, and also be like, and I don't have to hold on to that forever.
Well, and here comes the quitting.
Yes, here it comes. So I started this research because I was like, I just no longer can live in this world where never, ever, ever give up. Hard work and grit, it always pays off. And the same thing I thought, and I say this to people, and everybody knows what I'm talking about. Kate, I am never going to be an NBA basketball player, and you aren't either. Like, we know that not all things are possible. We know that there are dreams and goals out there that like, that's just not realistic and achievable. We know that. And so I think that when we repetitively hear what I would call toxic positivity,
yeah.
I think there's a part of us that just goes, that's not for me. And then we're turned off, because I believe that deep down we know. So I started looking at the research, and it turns out there is this little narrow sliver of social science research. I'm a secret research nerd. Mm-hmm. Sliver of social science research that's called goal disengagement.
Write that down, everybody.
Goal achievement, right? We know what it's like to pursue goals. But there's a thing called goal disengagement. What is the process of disengaging from goals that are not realistic, that no longer serve us, that aren't working out? So that instead of banging your head against a brick wall or continuing on a dead end path, there's another option. And it turns out that people who practice goal disengagement are happier and more successful. Ta-da!
Ta-da!
I'm giving you permission to give up on things that you've been pursuing if they're not working out, if they are no longer serving you. And there's caveats to that. It doesn't mean give up on life. It does not mean, you know, go hole up with nothing but your Netflix account for the rest of your life. But it does mean that there are some strategies and ways, and I'm happy to share with you about how do we successfully disengage from what's not working out so that we can free up our resources, our time and our energy and our money and our passions and all of these things for things that are going to work.
Amen. Anybody that's been around here for a while, you know I'm obsessed with this idea. It matches so many of the things that we talk about and the fact that there's research behind it. If you get my newsletter, you know that I put an actual piece of peer-reviewed research in my newsletter to support whatever episode we're sharing that week. So if you know that I'm like at the edge of my seat. I want to have this conversation all day. I'm here, I'm into it, and I want all of y'all to quit something today. And the thing that I find so common in the burnout community is, well, I reached my goal and it didn't feel or look like I expected, but I spent all this money on school, the sunk cost fallacy, right? I spent all this money on school. I spent all this time doing this thing. I'm still paying off student loans. I don't feel like I can get another job in another career line or a different career path. Even if I could, I don't know what it would be. And so we go through like 4 million reasons why disengaging from this goal is not working. And that's part number one. So I need to make notes because this is a big conversation. So first there's like all the reasons to avoid disengaging, right?
Our goals are us. You know, we have been conditioned to believe that we are our achievements. And if we're our achievements, then we are our goals.
Yes. And the other part that I think is critical to talk about is the release of the attachment to what we thought the goal result looked like. So this is, I'm talking to you, doctors and healthcare workers and teachers. And not only, because this suits a lot of situations, but this goes down a moral injury path of like, I got into this profession to help people and now I'm stuck, you know, doing all this extra admin or dealing with my principal on the weekends when like I should be like, and then I'm spending all my spare money to get pencils for my classroom because there's no budget in the school department. And like these kids are getting to school and they're not fed and I can't even teach them. And I'm a nurse because I love people and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this attachment to what we think a goal will end up being and feeling like, and getting to a place where it just isn't, there's a lot of people that are shouting and saying, change the system so that it's what I wanted it to be. Instead of, I'm going to quit the system and still help people or still engage with people in a way that's more aligned.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I can help with that.
Yes. Yeah, so let's dig into how... The reason I went over those two things, you guys, because I want you to understand that I know that you're making up reasons to avoid disengaging before we even start. Because I would too, because I'm a rebel, because I fight against new ideas, because I'm a skeptic, because that it's just my brain. So there might be reasons that you're avoiding it and you might still be attached to the dream that doesn't exist. And even if those things are true, the things that Courtney is about to offer you still work. So let's get into how do we disengage from a goal?
It's not easy to disengage from a goal, especially for those of us who are high achievers, who have correlated our goals to our self-worth. A lot of times, I mean, we introduce ourselves, we live in a society where where we introduce ourselves by what do you do? It is fully our identity. And so anything along those paths, you know, that's really hard to let go of. Something for me, when I was actually married when I went through cancer the first time, and my spouse was not as supportive as I would like. That's an understatement. And I ended up getting divorced because I realized life was too short. And I never thought of myself as a divorced person. And people did accuse me of giving up on my marriage. The way that you, the number one best way that the research found that you disengage from a goal that's not working out is you find and substitute another goal. Right. Disengagement is much easier when you can re-engage with another goal. For me, that was my work. And so I was able to say, I can't believe I'm going to be a divorced 26, 27 year old. But you know what I am? I'm the PR director of this nonprofit. And I do these television segments and I am these other things. So you invest in the things that you do care about and are working out for you. So you disengage by re-engaging somewhere else. That's hugely important. The next step as you disengage, but and maybe even before you re-engage, there's kind of like this middle spot here that also speaks to your second question or your second theme here that you want to address. The best way. So the more ways you have to achieve something, the more achievable it is. So if we're talking about goals and this goal didn't work out, well, as you're going to set a new goal, let's try to make sure that this is something that you can achieve, that you're not going to have to give up on or let go of. So to do that, we prepare in advance. And we want to reset a new goal for ourselves, realizing that the more ways you have to achieve something, the more achievable it is. Right? It's easier to go on vacation to a city that has 200 flights a day going to it than two flights a day going to it. The more ways you have to achieve something, the more achievable it is. So keeping that in mind then, to build the ways so that you're not just like, this is how it has to be. What I had to learn is that there's a difference between a goal and a plan.
Break it down.
Yeah. So too often in life, we set a goal. What we've really set is a path to a goal. So like if you want to use medicine as it, as our example here, I knew a guy who was like, I'm going to be a doctor and I'm going to go to this Ivy League medical school, the same one that my father went to. Anything else would be failure. That's tight, right? That's not giving yourself a lot of flexibility and leeway to achieve that goal. That's saying it has to look exactly like this. So a lot of times when we've set what we think is a goal, we've really made a plan. And if we realize, if we buy into the more ways you have to achieve something, the more achievable it is, then in order to build a lot of paths to something, you need to make a bigger goal. So this is a strategy I call supersizing your goal.
Okay.
So you think about something that you want. People say, you know, I want to save $10,000. That's my goal for 2024. I want to save $10,000. Well, I would argue that that is actually a plan. That is a plan towards the goal of being more financially secure. And it's not the only plan. It's one path. Save $10,000 is a path. Also cut back on spending is a path. Also hire a financial advisor is a path. All these different paths you can take so that if you only save $9,500, you didn't fail. You just have to supplement that path with this other path, So, you know, if you there's somebody in your life who wants to run a marathon, right? A lot of people want to run a marathon. That feels like a goal. But when I asked people, why do you want to run a marathon? The answers were, you know, I want to be a top level athlete, not just average. I want to be a top level athlete. Or when we got right down to it, there were several versions of, I want to do something that other people in my life can't do or haven't done. So it's not the marathon itself that's the goal. It's that feeling. It's some type of accomplishment. And the great news is that if you supersize your goal to realize the marathon is just a strategy, the goal is I want to do things that other people just don't do because it's too hard. Then if you tear your ACL while training for the marathon, you might still have other ways to achieve your ultimate goal. This played out in my life because with the cancer, I can't have a baby. It's not a good idea for me to get pregnant. And I had to realize that for me, I just always assumed I would get pregnant and have a baby and be a mom. And that's something that I wanted. But when I supersized that goal, what I realized is it's not really being a mom that's it for me. And I may not be able to be a mom because with my cancer history, a lot of adoption isn't even open for me. International adoption is closed. You know, there's a lot of reasons why I will probably never get to parent a tiny baby. But what I realized is what was really driving me is a feeling of wanting to be significant. Wanting to build a family, leave a legacy, have people in my life that would think about me when I was gone. I can do that without having a baby.
You can have a podcast.
I can leave that to you. That could be your baby. But you're exactly right. Yeah. For me, when I supersized that goal, I realized there were actually multiple ways that I could achieve what I truly wanted. And we adopted a teenager. I mentor a young woman who was fresh out of college and wants to, you know, follow in my footsteps. We have built a family of people that we surround ourselves with. It looks a little different, but it achieves my goal. And so supersizing your goal so that you truly understand what's underpinning that drive of yours. And then you can build multiple paths towards that supersized goal. And then if one path isn't available to you, that's okay. You got other paths. But that's only possible if you've supersized the goal. If you know what it is you're really trying to achieve, then if this job isn't it, if this relationship isn't it, you're aware of what it is you're actually going for.
It's like an NBD. So what I would like to talk about supersizing at the moment is burnout recovery. Because a lot of people in this community, like the goal is to recover from burnout. When we supersize that, the reason that I know these things is because I talk to you guys behind the scenes all the time. When we supersize that, the things that we hear are, I want to have a better connection with my family. I don't want to be so tired and exhausted from work and the way I'm engaging with the world that I can't engage with my family in a way that makes them feel loved and makes me feel connected. This is a huge one that comes up. Another one is that, like, bigger, I want to recover from burnout and I want to live in a different way because I want to almost prove to other people that you don't have to follow all those rules. I want to do it differently just to show that the path that they're on is not the only path and that you can be joyful and have some level of balance and measure of
contentedness in your day-to-day life. I want to recover from burnout because I want to break the cycle of my family's bullshit patterns that I'm stuck in. And so there's a lot of supersizing that can happen in this goal. And so if you're listening right now and you don't know what yours is, that's okay. This is a conversation that we can have a little deeper in the Facebook group. Like we can talk about this, you know, let's supersize, let's dig a little bit. Let's try and figure it out. Because this makes a lot of sense to me that if we make it bigger and there's more paths and we're less attached to each path, then it's easier to move from one to the next without getting caught up in like, well, this is the only way to get it done.
That's right.
It doesn't. Which is what got us burnt out in the first place, probably.
Yeah. It's not make or break. I think what can burn people out is this constant, you know, it's the grind, literally grinding. Like it has to be this way. And so there is a lightness when you can get on board with the concept of giving up, because you're not giving up your life. You're not giving up and taking a nap. I love a nap. I'm not bagging on naps. but you are giving up this one way that isn't doing it for you. And to me, that then frees you from the repetitive path that you ground yourself into.
I also want to share another story of what this might look like in a life, because one of the things that I'll ask my lovely listeners to do, another thing that I'm going to ask you to do with this episode, is I'm going to ask you to look back into your life, into a time that you've done this and done it successfully. Because there probably is something that you've done already and done successfully, and that will help prove to you that this is possible. So as Courtney's talking, I'm thinking about the fact that I went to college as a pre-med biology major because I had said my whole entire life that I was going to be a doctor. I was 3 when I told my grandmother the first time, I'm going to be a doctor. That's what I'm going to do. And I had the grades for it and I got a scholarship for it, and I got there and I hated every second of it. And I took a class on the sociology of medical school. And I was like, okay, if I do this math real quick, I'm going to be 32, $250,000 in debt, exhausted from overwork. And then they're going to expect me to care for people, but I only get 7 minutes to talk to them per chief complaint. And if I don't subscribe, then I don't get paid and I can't go to.
And
it became really clear to me that that plan, become a doctor, the supersized goal version of that, the supersized idea behind that was, I want to live a life that helps people be healthy. And that turned into acupuncture school, which is a much different way to serve people. And now I don't practice acupuncture anymore. I was a very good acupuncturist. I was very successful at it, and it burnt me out. Because I'm not actually designed to work with 80 people a week. I don't actually have that kind of energy. And in order to be successful and have enough money in the way that the system is set up and with insurance as it is in the States, you have to see 80 people a week in order to be successful, right? So I found another path from that. So I have supersized this goal many times and adjusted the path many times on my way to finding one that works for me in a way that doesn't kill me at the same time.
I think most people, you're asking people to reflect back. I think most people have done this.
Yeah, me too.
We get better at it as kids.
Mm.
Because if you think about the way life is structured when you're a kid, I mean, we are constantly asked every semester, or at least every school year, it's like, bye-bye teachers, bye-bye, you know, bye-bye this class, bye-bye history class, now we're going to go to government class, you know, the next year. And it's, we are doing it, and or your parents may pack up and move you across the country, bye-bye friends, bye-bye house. We are constantly called on. You try out for a sports team and you don't get it, or the school play and you don't get the part that you want. And, you know, you may not get into your first choice college. You get dumped by your first love. There are so many times in our younger years where we're not going to get what we want. And first of all, we're also surrounded by people of our same developmental stage who are also not getting what they want and having to move from plan and path to, you know, different plan and path. And so, but then the older we get more control over our lives. We get to make the choices of, you know, what jobs we're going to take and where we're going to live. And we mistake that bit of control for, and now I control everything and I don't have to give anything up and I can do whatever I want to. And so then when we are called on to make a decision to keep persisting or to pivot, it's like this personal affront. Like, well, I'm a grown up. I just want to do what I want to do. Hashtag adulting. Like, I got to pay taxes, but isn't this the benefit that I get? So I do think when we tap back into our brains and realize like, oh yeah, I do know how to do this.
Yeah.
I have in my life found a different path and a different plan and, you know, a different career. I thought I was going to be a Broadway actress. And then I realized that I love performing, but I hate the life of a performer.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of us have that story that we can reflect onto and like, oh yeah, I do know how to do this. I just have to choose it.
And it's okay to let things go when you realize that they don't fit. Like, doctor didn't fit me. I love to sing. I should not sing in front of groups because no one should love to hear me sing. But also the same, like, I have people, sometimes when I'm doing a keynote, people come up to me after and they're like, are you also in comedy? And I'm like, no, because mama doesn't work after 6 p.m.
I'm a morning person too.
Like, I'm not working at that time. That lifestyle is not for me. That does that mean that I can't take some comedy classes to make my keynotes better? Sure. But just because I think that I could do something like that and do it successfully doesn't mean I actually want the life that comes with it. I didn't want the life that came with doctor. I didn't want the life that came with, right? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we need to also like have a little bit of discernment around what the dreams really mean. What this, oh, I want to be a Broadway actress. Do you really though? Like, do you really?
Oh, and what I wanted was, I had this realization. I was 21 and I'm walking down the street and I went, I don't want to be famous. Yeah. I want to be important.
Mm.
And that's different. In a way that I couldn't have grasped when I was, you know, in ninth grade, imagining my future. So right there, that was probably my first experience ever supersizing my goal before I knew what I had ever put words to it. But I realized, like, I thought it looked like this because, you know, when you're young, you only see very literal careers, you know, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, doctor, lawyer, whatever. I wouldn't have realized that to be an author and a speaker and a researcher was even a career. But now I get to be on stage in a way that's even more meaningful to me. And I get to call the shots a little bit more. So for me, it's really important that we reframe this concept of giving up, not as failure, but as a movement towards success. Because we are going to be more successful the better we get at acknowledging, like noticing, and then piecing out of the paths that are not serving us.
Pride fam. In order to disengage, we must re-engage. And in order to re-engage well, we must supersize goals so that we know what the ultimate goal is that we're going for, what the real thing, the real feeling, the real experience, the real that we're going for, so that we can define
many paths to get there. As many paths as there are through burnout recovery, there are to whatever goal that you're going for at the moment. There's a lot of different ways to get there. I think that this episode will lead to a lot of a lot of reflection. And I want to have this conversation in the Facebook group. So tell us if you're able to supersize the goal. Do you know what's behind it? Do you need help looking into it? Like, let's talk about this, because this is the exact definition of unstuckness. This is how we move that feeling of indecision and stuckness when we provide a perspective and a possibility that's fresh and new. And sometimes when you're burnt out, you don't have the brain power to do it all yourself. That's okay. That's why we have 3,000 people in a group helping you do it. So you don't have to do it alone. Courtney, I am so damn grateful to you for your work, for your ability to pivot, for your ability to show up, for your ability to say in front of tens of thousands of people, I did want to quit. I was very clear on that. If there are people out there that are like, I think we need Courtney at our event. I think we need to bring Courtney in. How do they get in touch with you? Where do they find you? What's the best way?
I love working with organizations who are going through change. My website is CourtneyClark.com. No E on the end of Clark. My Scottish grandfather would roll over in his grave if you put an E on the end of Clark. CourtneyClark.com. My email is Courtney@CourtneyClark.com. And you can feel free to email me or call me. 512-494-4276.
I love it.
We are in this together
100%. Courtney, thank you so much. Fried fam, I adore you, and I'll see you next time.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.